The most practical way to own a boat is not to own one. Without doubt, that really is the most valuable piece of practical advice ever published in PBO. Indeed, if you're lucky enough not yet to be a boat owner and you ever think of buying one, there's only one sensible course of action. Place all your worldly possessions in the hands of a disreputable swindler, and when everything's gone, simply gloat at how much better off you are than if you'd bought a boat. In no time you'll be reviled, but also revered for your financial acumen. In fact, it might even be worth thinking of setting up in financial services in a porter cabin with a yucca plant somewhere on the banks of the Hamble. The thing is, it's an age-old marina moan that boat ownership is like standing under a cold shower, tearing up 50-pound notes. As a sailfish owner, I regard that as an aspiration, as indeed is standing upright down below. But frankly, that also puts an irresponsible gloss on it, because the money is only a small part of the pain. When I was a carefree crew, I used to think that the word lager was a proper nautical term. Through careful study of yachts coming alongside pontoons, I'd quickly grasped that once you've tossed a slipknot over or near a mooring cleat, all the crew are supposed to beat their chests, throw back their heads, shout lager in unison, and then sprint off down the pub. Then, as you reach the shore, someone, normally the most sensitive one, is supposed to call back, "Oi, skipper, do you want anything from the shops?" The most important thing here is to make sure that you're out of earshot. So as we settled in for the night, around a mound of steaming waterproofs, one of the main topics of our barroom chatter was always how stressed and antisocial skippers are. Tight, too. Strange how most skippers always seem to bowl in just after the barman's called time. More than just coincidence, don't you think? And the ones who actually deign to arrive before last orders just stand there throbbing like a lighthouse when they ought to be at the bar buying a round. Some of them have no idea of team spirit. But now I'm older and wiser, and a boat owner too, and I've come to understand a fundamental boating truth, that there must be a rift of mutual resentment between skipper and crew. It's simply the law of the sea. The trouble is that crew just don't understand the momentous responsibility that weighs upon our shoulders. While they're playing with iPods, texting pals, and eating everything, we'll be churning over slightly more weighty matters, like tides, currents, winds, trying to figure out where the heck we are, and generally not killing anyone. For days before we set off, I'll have been fretting about weather systems and downloading synoptic charts. Then I'll get a call from my guest, asking what factor sunblock to bring. Don't they know I've got more important things on my mind? Have we got enough fuel? What's that creaking sound? Is the rig going to collapse? Will the sails rip? Will every rope, sheet and line unravel or part? Will the keel fall off? Crew, however, seem mostly to have one major concern, and that's, where are the ginger nuts? In fact, there's only one question that annoys me more, and that is, when are we going to get there? How the heck am I supposed to know? It's sailing, after all. It depends on things I have no control over. Arriving anywhere is always a miracle, an achievement. But as a skipper, there's no time to relax. The first thing you do is redo all the mooring lines that the crew haven't tied properly before they scampered off to the deserter's arms. And I couldn't even make out what one of them shouted from the other end of the pontoon. Of course, you mustn't mention it, otherwise they'll accuse you of being overcritical, a control freak, or a megalomaniac psychopath, and all because you had a bit of an issue about wanting your boat still to be there when you got back. Not that you'll be away for long. While they're on their second pint, I'm still on board trying to figure out whether we've got enough water under us so we don't dry out, what tomorrow's weather and tides are doing, and when we have to leave so they can all get back in time to watch the Grand Prix. Only then can you relax. You walk into the bar, and if the barman hasn't already called time, the buggers expect you to buy them a drink. Believe me, it's not the money.